Welcome back to The Takeaway. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. You know, there are a lot of people who are ready to just get out of 2016 already. A pretty awful year for a lot of folks in a lot of ways. And forget about electoral politics. People from Prince to Debbie Reynolds have passed away. And so did a sports world legend, the greatest, Muhammad Ali. But hey, 2016 wasn't all bad. Not when you hear this.
And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series.
Simone Biles, 15-9.
The national championship goes to Connecticut for the fourth year in a row.
The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Ledecky, gold medal. Ledecky, world record.
Dave Zirin is here. He's sports editor for The Nation magazine, and he says 2016 was a year of spectacular performances on the field and the court, but also one where athletes use their status and their fame to dive into important social and political issues. He starts us off with a couple of Midwestern cities that broke curses this year.
In Cleveland, you're talking about the Cavaliers winning the city's first title since 1964 in any sport whatsoever. And this was a city that was actually nicknamed in the 1950s the City of Champions. And the fact that there have been no titles since 1964 for many people in Cleveland, it mirrored the fall of the city itself from being an industrial center to being part of the so-called Rust Belt. So that's very intense.
Yeah.
And so to have the Cavs break that, it has all sorts of symbolism attached to it.
But the Cubs curse, I mean, this was the most famous curse in sports, the longest one, and really the one that even non-baseball fans kind of knew about.
Oh, and the ratings reflected that in a major way. I mean, the ratings for the World Series were the highest baseball had seen since the early 1990 World Series, which is amazing. It just shows you the degree to which people reattached themselves to the sport who had fallen away. And also the parallels as well are two teams that were down 3-1. So two teams where, you know, better luck next year looked like not just prophecy, but probability.
So we'll stay on the field or in the pool. I mean, the Rio Olympics in 2016 had some stellar athletic performances from Simone Biles, Katie Ledecky, Simone Manuel, of course, Michael Phelps, just, you know, unbelievable records. And people could follow all these triumphs and accomplishments. And then this quintessentially American media sideshow. Oh, of Ryan Lochte and this Access Hollywood nonsense antics that people went crazy for. And this was just the most, you know, American thing that you could do, you know?
I got to tell you, I was in Rio for the entire Ryan Lochte drama. And it was remarkable on a very grassroots, ground floor level to see how the emotions changed. And then to have Ryan Lochte, who I think unarguably is one of the 10 most famous Olympians on Earth, to have him say that he was held up at gunpoint by a police officer and robbed, people felt this tremendous amount of shame. I mean, people were like, oh my God, we came so close to pulling this off without some international embarrassment. And then this happens. But the part about it that's the most egregious is just how upset it made people in Brazil, to the point of which there was this big board at the Rio International Airport where people were writing like goodbye messages in dozens of different languages to the people of Rio. And it was very beautiful. And I went back to the airport a couple times just to look at how that board was progressing over the days. And after the Lochte thing, I mean, dozens and dozens of messages of people saying, we're sorry for Ryan Lochte. Please don't judge all Americans by Ryan Lochte. And so the shame wasn't just Rio shame moving to anger. It was U.S. sort of smugness, I would argue, then moving to shame and embarrassment.
And all of us in the media can take some responsibility for that, but there's just no getting around that it was a low point for an otherwise fantastic Olympics. At the same time, Ethiopian marathoner Faisal Alessa made a huge international statement when he crossed the finish line a silver medal in the marathon that wasn't consumed very widely in this country.
No, that's exactly right. Faisal Alessa, who I interviewed in person, is from the Oromo people in Ethiopia. And currently, there is just mammoth oppression taking place of the Oromo as there's an effort to expand the capital city of Addis Ababa. And people are being displaced by the hundreds. People are being killed. People are disappearing. And the international symbol of resistance is holding your arms up and crossing your arms. I mean, doing that in front of the wrong military official at the wrong time can be a death sentence in Ethiopia. And so Lilesa doing that, I mean, it made him a hero. People wrote folk songs about him. One of the things that he showed, which is, I think, a very useful lesson going forward, is that the brighter the light you shine on issues such as this, the greater chance of, frankly, survival. Because the Ethiopian government has had to say explicitly that his family is not in danger, that he can come home. And, you know, that would certainly, you know, not be the case if he had just, frankly, even come home without making that symbol, because he felt in danger before he made that sign. But the fact that he was so public with it makes it actually much harder to go after him.
I want to talk about Colin Kaepernick, of course, one of the major sports stories and political stories of the year. But I want to talk about him in the context of Muhammad Ali, who died this year. And I want to talk about these two guys together. Colin Kaepernick, of course, the quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, famously takes a knee during the playing of the national anthem to protest the treatment of people of color at the hands of police, earned a lot of enemies and a lot of supporters. Dave Zirin, what's been shocking to me was how many people angry at Colin Kaepernick, and that's fine to be angry at him. You don't have to like his protest. Took this tone, like he's fortunate. You know, he should therefore shut up and play. And then he doesn't have any moral standing because he's privileged, and almost no appreciation from these same quarters that Muhammad Ali was similarly situated back in the 60s. Not identical, but was maligned, was hated, was told to shut up. And this is a guy who wound up with presidents at his funeral. Because people in retrospect realized that he was right to protest and that he used his privilege and gave it all up for something bigger than himself.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing about Colin Kaepernick that I think has made his protest so electric as well. It's saying, no, there's something fundamentally wrong systemically. Colin Kaepernick's case, it was how we do policing in this country. Muhammad Ali, it was U.S. foreign policy and its connection to racism at home. They said, no, that there's a real division here and we should acknowledge it and we're taking a side. Kaepernick is showing that dissent can be visible and attractive, the same way Muhammad Ali showed that dissent can be visible and attractive, which is certainly, I don't think, the way dissent is often portrayed in our society or in our culture. And that makes it very powerful. And Colin Kaepernick also very consciously sees himself as part of a history that's connected to Muhammad Ali. He's been wearing Muhammad Ali shirts to games, speaking about he doesn't think that Muhammad Ali should have died in vain. And I really do think there's a connection between all these athletes who are trying to stand up and speak out and the fact that Ali's funeral happened this year and forced so many people to reckon with the actuality of who Ali was, not just the kind of silent figure who he was for so many decades because of Parkinson's.
Dave Zirin is sports editor for The Nation magazine, reflecting with us on some of the big sports moments of 2016.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.